Hello, happy new year, and welcome to episode 6 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Tom Carnuff, and joining me today is Radio Yorkshire's Billy Banks. It's a transfer special this episode, so we'll be looking at all the big rumours and confirmed deals from across the Football League, as well as previewing the upcoming action in the FA Cup third round.
This is the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Hello, welcome to the first 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire of 2016. It's Billy Banks in for Sam Bridges. Joining me, the editor of the72.co.uk, and that's Tom Carnduff. Hello, Tom.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm very good. You have a good new year?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. How about yours?
Very, very nice. And much more civilised than a lot of people I've been speaking to today.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget, you can send us your thoughts via at FBL72 on Twitter, or just visit the72.co.uk. We're going to start by talking about some transfers, because, of course, it's January. It's the transfer window, something that everybody looks forward to. I had a power cut on Boxing Day, so I had to go and watch the football in a bit of a dingy pub, and they actually had posters up for transfer deadline day, Monday, wow, the 1st of February 2016. That's how big it's
become. Become like, you know, well, I would say annual event, but say every January, and, well, it's September now, isn't it?
Doesn't September end, it's August.
Like September the 2nd or whatever it is.
The so January
an annual,
better,
annual
though,
event now.
The January one's better, I think, because it's more condensed, it's just a month, and it does seem to be that last day, a few, you can smell the desperation in the air, can't you?
Yeah, it's 11 p.m. as well, this one. Last one was like 5 p.m. window close.
Yeah,
it was a bit...
Yeah. I prefer when it's 11 p.m. You can stay up late, and it's just a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's have a look at some of the rumours that have been emerging already in early January. The first one caught my eye today. Benny Kofobe. Norwich won for him in the summer, weren't they? Now Derby County apparently linked with him.
Yeah, that's probably been the biggest story... Well, transfer story in the Football League since the window's open, actually. Benny Kofobe, like you said, Norwich tried to get him. I think they bid nearly, well, up to £10 million in the summer, which was rejected, which is fair enough, because as a result, Kofobe's gone on and got 10 goals, is it? I think in 25 appearances this season. Good young player. He's only 22 as well. Derby are willing to pay a record fee, apparently, although that's what reports suggest, to sign him. Their previous record fee was £6 million for Bradley Johnson, who they signed in the summer, or as he referred to it, signing for Derby City.
Derby City, of course.
Yeah, that was it.
Well-known side.
Yeah. So they're looking to get a Kofobe in to add to their strike force, and you think they're sitting second in the Championship at the moment, so I think it might be a good time to gamble and pay that money just to try and secure Premier League promotion, because they've kind of slipped or fallen at the final hurdle in recent years, so I think they'll just want to get it done and dusted this season.
Yeah, I think they need a bit of a boost. That defeat against Middlesbrough is pretty damaging to their promotion hopes. It's an interesting one for me, this, because 22 goals in 46 games. Some of that was in League One as well. Was it in League One or was it Championship last season for Wolves?
Championship.
So they're all Championship goals.
Well, yeah, because he joined Wolves in the January window last year.
Yeah.
Because before that, he managed to get 19 goals in the first half of the League One season for MK Dons.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So that's how, you know, he got Wolves' attention. They brought him straight from Arsenal. I think he's a good young striker. Very, you know, he's got what probably Derby need at the moment. He's something different. Maybe it is planning for the future, you know, preparing to get to the Premier League and
but
looking long term.
But is he good enough for the Premier League? Because there's no doubt his record suggests he'll score goals in the Championship.
Yeah.
He scores goals in a Wolves side, which isn't as good as that Derby side, which would suggest he'd keep scoring. But is he good enough to be that man to score the goals if and when they get promotion?
Maybe not straight away, but then you've got to look at the rising prices of transfers. Every season they seem to be going up and up, and player valuations going up and up. So I think maybe Derby's thinking is that they'll have a cracking striker for the second half of the season. They'll go up to the Premier League long term, try and stay in the Premier League, because if they come straight back down with all the effort they've put in to finally get back into the Premier League, it'll be a bit of a disaster for them. So I think maybe pay that bit more, pay however much it'll be. It'll obviously be over £6 million for a Kofobe now.
Well, how much are we talking? Because if Norwich had £10 million,
I was going to say,
hasn't gone down, has it?
No, they must be talking maybe 12 odd now, I reckon. But then you think that Jordan Rhodes may make a move to, you know, Borough in this window as well, and he's valued at around 14, 15 million. It's just, if you want a good quality Championship striker and you think the rewards they're going to get, if he does fire them into the Premier League at the end, it will be money well spent for them.
Yeah, certainly will be. It is strange, though, when you think about, you know, Championship strikers being linked with the same money as Edin Dzeko went to Roma for.
Yeah,
and
crazy,
I saw some rumour with Chelsea going for Odion Ighalo, who's, you know, scored a lot of goals in the Premier League,
yeah,
and apparently valued at $12 million. So it's crazy, really, this inflated market in the Championship. We're talking about Derby there, you know, promotion hopes. Obviously, well on track, but had a bit of a blip against Middlesbrough at the weekend. At one time, Brighton, who... their promotion challenge is really at the skids. Three straight defeats recently. They're after a striker. Miler Bolaños. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, like you said, Brighton have had a bit of a miserable Christmas, really. It looked going well. They had 21 games unbeaten, and the game against Middlesbrough was where they finally slipped up. And then since then, they haven't really been able to get it. But yeah, they're looking to break their club record fee. Milan Bolaños is South American, well, Colombian striker. Or is he Ecuadorian striker? He's made 105 appearances for the side he's currently at, which is Emelec. He scored 61 and assisted 23.
Not a bad record.
In 105 games, that's a pretty good return. 25 years old as well, so got a fair few years ahead of him. I think if Brighton were to strengthen, I think they do need another striker.
Yeah.
Because you look at James Wilson's only on loan, so long-term he's not the way forward. The same with Bobby Zamora in terms of long-term.
Yeah.
He's getting on a bit. He can still score now, but I think they still... I want someone for the future who, if they do go up as well, they'd probably be via the playoffs now. I think they may have... I think Middlesbrough and Derby are the ones that are going to get automatic in the end. But if they do go up, it is a striker for the future and seems to be attracting top European interest as well. I think Feyenoord were linked with him well today. So it'd be a tough one, but they're rumoured to be willing to pay around £7-8 million for him, so... if they do get it, it'll seem, on paper, it'll seem a fantastic signing for them.
There's a lot of money. There's always a question mark over players coming from South America. Will they settle quickly enough to you know, make an impact straight away? But we've seen other Ecuadorians come to English football. Antonio Valencia with Wigan and Manchester United. And Enner Valencia, before his injury, is very good for West Ham. So we know that Ecuadorians can come to the English football, these shores, and do well. But that's a lot of money for a striker who's not got a proven track record in Europe.
Yeah, but it's kind of a similar situation to Derby and Borough, I think, in terms of you've got to look and you've got to gamble now. Brighton last season, it was a dreadful season for them. You know, they were near relegation. And then you look at this season to think they were top for that long, unbeaten for that long, is fantastic. I think they've maybe got to look at the same approach as Borough and Derby, that are they going to get this close again next season and future seasons? Maybe they could, but they'll need to have a good, decent squad to do so. So you're looking at players like that, only 25, and he's got that return already. If you can, maybe even now, if they don't go up this season, it'll give him half a season to settle into English football and the Championship, and they can go for it again properly next season with presumably him leading the forward line.
One side who are always knee-deep in transfer speculation when it gets to transfer windows, Leeds United. A couple of their fantastic young players, Sam Byram and Lewis Cook, gaining Premier League interest. What's the latest there? Because they've been linked with moves for about the last 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah, they're four youngsters at Leeds, Taylor, Mark, Cook, Byram. They're really the heart of that Leeds side. Well, this season, Taylor's been out of injury, Byram's had the contract talk, etc. But particularly last season, they really kept Leeds out of relegation trouble, really. But the two are Sam Byram and Lewis Cook. Byram's seems pretty certain to be leaving Leeds. I think it looks more likely to be this window. I think Leeds would rather take the transfer fee for him as opposed to wait for a tribunal if he does go somewhere at the end of the season, because he's out of contract, not signing any deal offered to him. So I think it might be, if Leeds are to go, I think it might be wise to take the $8 million that they want, who clubs like Bournemouth are willing to pay. Got to look and say, you're not going to get that much, and if the player wants to go, then going to have to let him leave, I think. But I don't know whether he does want to go. That's the issue.
I was going to ask you about was the fact that since he's come back into the team, he's got goals, he's got assists. He doesn't look like a player who wants to leave. And even if he knows he's leaving, he seems to be playing like someone who will be committed to the cause right to the end. And we've seen teams like, for instance, when Danny Ings went to Liverpool from Burnley, the transfer tribunal seems to be looking after the smaller clubs in these situations. I think Burnley ends up getting about $8-10 million for Danny Ings. So would it make more sense for Leeds to keep him until the end of the season, because he seems to be putting in the performances, and go to the tribunal where they'll be financially rewarded as well?
I think it'd make more sense for them to make an offer to make him stay. The rumours, reports are that the offer given to him is not really... there's no wage increase on it, and it's just an extra year stay. So I don't know whether that's kind of a just stay here because we could, your value could keep going up and we could sell you off for longer in the future. But I think the thing is, if you see a player and value him at £8 million, but it seems to be that they don't value him in terms of the wages, they won't be willing to give him, if reports are correct, they won't be willing to give him the pay increase, but they'll be willing to slap a big price tag on him and take a big amount of money. But surely if you value a player in the Championship as well, if you value him at £8 million, you'd be doing absolutely everything you can to keep him. And would that money be reinvested? I mean, you look at the names linked with Leeds at the moment. I don't think at the moment it would be a wise decision to let him leave. But because you look at, what is it, Carl Lafferty is one linked to Liam Bridcutt, he's currently on loan. But would they find a direct replacement for Byron? Would they find someone similar as well who could play right back if needed, push up the pitch and be attacking threat as he's shown? I don't know.
I think they'd struggle to replace Byron. Yeah. Quick word on Lewis Cook. Manchester United were linked with him at one point. Then it seemed like clubs like Bournemouth and Stoke were linked with him. What's the latest?
Yeah, there? Leeds put a similar price tag of £8 million on Cook as well. I think Cook's not necessarily one that they want to let go. He recently signed a new deal. I think it was a few months ago in the summer. He committed his future. I think he wants to stay. Leeds want him to stay. But obviously, if there's interest there, I think maybe putting a price tag like that of £8 million on, maybe the Premier League clubs will look and go, oh, well, his age, yes, but do we really want to pay that much for someone who's, you know, he's a fantastic player, but I don't think he's far from the finished product at the moment. And would he cope in the Premier League if he went up? Probably
not. Would he get a game?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he'd quite cut it in the Premier League yet, purely due to his age. So I think Championship experience would be really good for him, and obviously to stay at Leeds. And I think if Leeds want to look to the future, they should be keeping hold of these young players regardless. I don't think they're in a situation where they do need the money.
Or there's the trendy option these days of a Premier League club signing him and then loaning him back for a year, 18 months.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what happens there. Just finally for Section 1, Patrick Bamford. He's had an ill-fated spell on loan at Crystal Palace. Championship clubs will be interested. He was the Football League Player of the Year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Last season. Did very well
Middlesbrough,
for Middlesbrough. Scored a lot of goals. You know, where do you see his future line? Because I would imagine leaving Palace, as he did over the Christmas period, suggests he's looking for a move in January.
Yeah, he's obviously, the Palace spell didn't go to plan for either player or Palace. He has said, though, that there is Premier League options available to him. So obviously he does want to stay in the Premier League, which I think is understandable if you have the choice between that. But same time, I think he's got to kind of look at that spell at Palace and say, OK, it's not gone great. We all know it's not gone great. But then if two clubs that have been linked are Middlesbrough and QPR, especially Middlesbrough, he's been there before, he knows the fans, knows the club, etc. They're top of the league. Maybe if he went there for half a season, he could then look at that and say, OK, well, he can find his form again, start scoring the goals as he did, scored, you know, a ton of goals in the Championship, and then maybe go to somewhere like Middlesbrough and then look at it in the summer and say, OK, well, then look at the Premier League clubs, maybe a lower Premier League club where he can start scoring or playing regularly, scoring regular goals. And I think that's probably the best way for him going forward anyway.
Well, there you go. There's a look at some of the January transfer rumours so far. That's the end of Section 1. In Section 2, Tom will have more for you on Patrick Bamford.
You're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Yes, you're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire, and we'll carry on in this section with the last point in the last section, and that's on Patrick Bamford. He's interested in both Middlesbrough and QPR. Joining me on the phone is one of the 72's general news writers, Nick Hill. Nick Hill, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Good, good. And we'll get straight into it, really. The big question, I think, on a lot of people's, you know, lips for this one is, will Patrick Bamford return to the Championship on loan? I mean, he said he's got Premier League interest. Can you see it happening, maybe, to Borough or QPR?
Yeah, I can see it happening, to be honest. I think there is bound to be Premier League interest, but I think the loan spell that he's, and the time he spent at Crystal Palace might just hurt him in a bit of a way. And I mean, I've seen Swansea have been linked with him quite a lot, and I think that would probably be a move that would suit both parties. But if Swansea were to go and find somebody else, it wouldn't surprise me if they did maybe choose someone with a slightly better record in the top flight just because of Bamford's recent loan spell, whereas he's much more proven in the Championship. And obviously last season he did such a good job at Middlesbrough. I think there's bound to be Championship interest the minute that he went back to Chelsea.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, we spoke about in the last section, me and Billy, about this. And I was thinking one of the, probably with that loan spell at Palace, it was a bit of a disaster, really. You know, there was the occasional appearance, no goals. He really struggled, and he didn't find that form that, you know, won him awards last season in the Championship. Do you reckon a move back to Borough would suit him best out of, you know, potentially interested clubs? Because, I mean, that's where he found his form. It might be a bit of a confidence boost, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, actually. And obviously, Borough are flying at the moment. They're doing exceptionally well. I mean, the fact that Borough are doing so well does raise questions about whether he'd be able to just waltz into the team there. But I think he would be able to work his way back in. I mean, he's got the affinity with the fans from last season. He was exceptional for them. As you said, he won awards and what have you. And I think you're right about Palace. It just didn't seem to work out for whatever reason. And there was obviously a few words said after he'd left, and they've almost been taken back a bit. And there's been a bit said. And I mean, as Pardew said, he liked Bamford. He thought he was a good player. But for whatever reason, after seeing him every day, he just didn't fancy Bamford really in the team. And I think that will have impacted on his confidence. And I think a move back down to the Championship, where he's probably just a bit more likely to not only get regular game time, but also score a few more goals. And probably he'd be going to, especially if he went to Borough, a team towards the top end of the Championship. I think that would be good for him, because he'd be playing in a team full of confidence. He'd have confident players around him. And obviously, as a striker, the only thing that's going to help your confidence is scoring goals. But firstly, he does need to find somewhere where he can actually get some game time after the disappointing spell he had at Palace.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, his Palace loan spell. Because, I mean, you look at Palace's, like, strikers. They've got a fantastic midfield. You know, you free the defence in there. They've got a great team in that respect. But then you look at the forwards, you think Bamford might be a, you know, a regular starter. I mean, Dwight Gayle, Connor Wickham, etc. Good strikers, but then you look at Bamford last season, you think he'd slot right in. But, well, the other team interests as well as Borough's QPR. And the one thing that, you know, strikes me is that if he did go to QPR, that'd be quite a big sign, and even on loan. Do you reckon that would probably signal, you know, a star player leaving, and that'd be Charlie Austin? Would that be a good move for QPR, do you reckon? I mean, if they got Bamford in, great, but at the same time, losing Charlie Austin, proven goal scorer, is that something that, do you reckon, QPR fans want?
That's a big thing, I think. That's the first thing I thought as well when I saw him linked with QPR, because obviously there's been other teams touted as having an interest in Austin, and with his contract being up, if QPR want to cash in, now's the time to do it. So I think if Bamford did come in, it may well be something that happened. Whether that's what the QPR fans would really want, I mean, Bamford's obviously, he proved himself in the Championship last season, in fairness, and Austin has had his injury issues this year, but Austin has been QPR's standout player, as most people expected, and it seems like when they need a goal, he's the man they go to, and that in part is probably why they've been struggling in recent weeks with his injury. But I think they're very different type of players, and I think Bamford, he offers, in a strange way, he offers an awful lot, does Patrick Bamford. He's the sort of player who can come deep and get the ball, but he can still make the runs through, and he's quite athletic. And Austin, in a lot of ways, and I think probably a reason he didn't get his move to the Premier League last summer for the prices, it sounds awful to say, but he's maybe not as complete as Bamford in his skills, but obviously he's a much more proven goal scorer. He scored in the top flight, he's scoring again in the Championship, and that's what it is with Austin. He's a very good goal scorer, and he's very good at holding the ball up, bringing other people into play. Whereas Bamford, you'd probably say, is less of an out-and-out goal scorer, despite his really good record last year, but would contribute more. So I think they are very different players. And I think if QPR could bring in Bamford as well as keeping Austin to give them another option, it would make them a lot stronger. But I don't think Queen's Park Rangers fans would be almost... I mean, if you're losing the goals of Charlie Austin as a Championship club, it's very difficult to replace it with anyone. And I think that's probably why they were so desperate to keep hold of him. And even if he could bring in Bamford with his goal record in the Championship, it'd still be a difficult one to take, losing Austin, just because he seems to just guarantee you goals, and he guaranteed them in the Premier League, so he can definitely guarantee them in the second tier.
And the thing that strikes me with Bamford is that he's coming from Chelsea, and he keeps going back to Chelsea at the end of these loan spells, etc. And I just can't see him having a future at Chelsea. They strike me as a team that, well, they've got all the money. As a club, they're very well off. They could just go out and get a striker if they needed it. Say, Costa's goals dried up, whatever. They could just go away, get a top striker from any league really in the world and just take him. It just seems that Bamford's just kind of one of those many players that they've got who just aren't up for it, that they just keep loaning out every season. And I mean, he is only young, but I just think Chelsea should sell him. I mean, if QPR do have to get rid of Austin, I'm sure, it seems to be every day on the site that we're running a story about Charlie Austin, or it's going to be this month about Charlie Austin gaining interest. Do you not think that Chelsea should just sell him off and, you know, for his career as opposed to loaning him out? I mean, a Championship club might get him a bit cheaper now with his Palace spell not being the best. It might show that he maybe can't cut it in the Premier League, so a Championship club could get him for a cut price, say, now compared to if they brought him in the summer.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, personally. I mean, I think Bamford's, what, 22 years old, so he's proven himself in the Championship last year. As you said, his record in the Premier League for Palace since going there on loan, he obviously hasn't played too many games, which asks questions of why Pardew hasn't turned to him, particularly when Palace's strikes haven't been great. And as you said with Chelsea, I mean, Loic Remy's struggling to get games for Chelsea at the moment, and he's a French international. He's been linked with a lot of high-calibre clubs in the past, and he's played for some pretty big clubs in the past, and he's got good records in the Premier League. And I think you're right. I mean, Chelsea have been poor this season, of course, and they still have a lot of young players. I mean, Loftus-Cheek, for example, who's really highly rated and has struggled to get into the team despite their troubles. And I think Bamford is going to struggle to break into a Chelsea side who've got so much money, and they've got players of a much higher calibre who've also proved themselves at a much higher level than Bamford. And that is a problem. And I think you're probably right, because Bamford doesn't want to get stuck in sort of the middle of nowhere almost, where he's going out on loan and he's doing well, but then at the end of each season or every 6 months he's having to go back to Chelsea, and then a new loan spell means you have to resettle again, and that can waste a few more months. I think a move to a club that would really play him, nurture him and almost look after him could do Bamford the world of good. And I think in the long run, a move to another club, maybe in the Championship or a lower end Premier League club, could help Bamford a lot more, because he'd be getting regular game time, he'd be playing regularly, and then obviously he could keep developing his game at one club and playing for them, and that could result in him making a move back up to maybe the top teams. But I don't think at the moment he's going to be anywhere near Chelsea's first team, and probably not for a while, so I think he could do with a move away, really. And if he got it permanently, I think it'd probably help him to be settled.
Yeah, it seems to be an ongoing one, and I think it's going to be a transfer story that's going to be resolved fairly quickly with, you know, the quality of player and the number of clubs interested. So that's the latest on the Patrick Bamford situation, and obviously it's one that many clubs will be watching intensely, particularly those that we've mentioned. Nicol, thank you for joining me on the phone and providing a little bit more knowledge and your opinions on the Patrick Bamford situation, and we'll speak to you again soon.
All About the Game, the 72 podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back. We move on to part three of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire, and to some of the stories that are big on the 72.co.uk after the weekend. Tom, we've got a lot of stories relating to transfers after the window opening, of course. Let's start with Ahmed El-Mohammadi, Hull player, been there for quite a few years now, attracting Premier League interest.
Yeah, El-Mohammadi can play right back or push up the pitch into right wing. I'm quite a big fan of him, actually. Had him in my fantasy Premier League team last season.
Did you?
Yeah, he did all right for me, actually.
He chips in with crosses and goals.
Yeah, so yeah, when he played further up the pitch. Anyway, he...
scary eyes. He's got really scary eyes, yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed.
Yeah, I can see it now. See what I
mean? Anyway,
in the summer, they managed to keep hold of him. Everton wanted him in the summer. I think Everton were one of the clubs anyway that wanted him in the summer, but Hull managed to keep hold of him, which was fantastic for them, and it's obviously helped them get to where they are in the league currently. But then Everton and West Brom are two teams who are looking into signing him this January window. I think two teams who have kind of struggled, well, Everton particularly have struggled in recent weeks. I think they're going to be looking towards a player like El-Mohammadi who can play in both positions, play defensively or push up the pitch when required. I think he'd be quite a good asset for a Premier League team to have, and he proved last season that he could play in the Premier League. I don't imagine he'll come cheap, though. I think Hull will want to keep hold of him, especially with the position they're in, because they realistically could challenge for automatic promotion at the moment. So I think they'll want to keep hold of him. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough when, obviously, a player sees Premier League interest in them, unsure whether he's going to be Premier League next year. I think it's going to be a tough one for Hull, but a good player anyway that I think deserves Premier League interest.
Well, he's certainly got Premier League experience. Gone are the days when Premier League sides could bully Championship clubs easily into selling their top assets. And I think Steve Bruce is the sort of manager who's got the character to keep a player from being distracted by the Premier League interest and keep him on side. At the end of the day, they're going for promotion and well set for it. Nottingham Forest had a bit of a revival under Dougie Friedman over the last sort of 10 games or so. They had a wretched start to the season, but they're not doing too badly at the moment. Linked with a Villarreal player, doing a bit of exotic continental shopping. Yeah. Bojan Djokic. I've never heard of him, if I'm honest.
Bojan Djokic, Forest are going to struggle a bit this transfer window with the embargo. So they're going to have to look towards free signings, or it's got to be, you know, certain under a certain wage on the loan system. And I think they've really gone for it here and fully explored the loan system and come back with Bojan Djokic, who plays as a fullback for Villarreal. He's international. He's played in the European qualifiers for Slovenia. He's played all around Europe as well, really. He's been at Italian side, Chievo, is it?
Chievo.
Chievo, that's how you pronounce it.
You've seen my sports bag, haven't you?
Yeah, very nice sports bag. Yeah. They're in Villarreal, obviously, at the moment. So, obviously, he's got the talent and potential to be there, but he struggled this season. He's made 22 appearances in total in La Liga, but two of those have come this season. So, obviously, he's not in their plans. But the potential's there. He's been a La Liga experienced player, especially in Italy as well. I think on paper, he looks to be a very good signing for Forest, who will be looking to push up that table, you know, challenge towards the top end.
Bit of a journeyman as well, so might have the toughness to manage championship football. And on to one that's really interested me, actually. Demarai Gray. How do you say his name?
I've always thought it was Demari.
I think it's Demari. We'll go with Demari.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
He's set to join Leicester City. Obviously, Birmingham, financially a complete mess, and they can do with a bit of transfer money, I imagine. He's been one of their key players, and at such a young age, he's got a big future ahead of him.
Seems a bit of a shame, because we spoke about Birmingham when we started doing these podcasts at the start of the season, that they were a team who, we put it as the Rowett Revolution, they were a team who were top six, they were pushing, you know, he'd really turned them round from relegation, you know, well, nearly certain relegation candidates, to a team that were looking towards promotion. They've fallen off it in recent weeks, and then going into the transfer window, this came out, I think, at the start of January, before the transfer window was even open. And I think this story was about for a while now. It's been around for a few weeks, certainly. Leicester City were going to sign him. I think that's going to happen maybe even today. They reckon that, you know, it's all done and dusted and he will leave Birmingham today. Like I said, I think with his age, it's a bit of a shame for Birmingham. A good signing for Leicester, though. But Birmingham won't be getting him back on loan either. Leicester have said he'll be part of the first team setup. So I suppose for a player like that, he's gone to a top Premier League team now, High Flyers.
Yeah, certainly.
But he's going to be involved in the first team. So I think that's a good move for him. And I think the price tag, I think it was in the contracts, so he can't do much about it, but they'll be feeling a bit.
How much is the price?
3.75 million.
Is that all?
Yeah.
That's very disappointing.
We were talking earlier about players like Sam Barham, Lewis Cook, other championship youngsters who are going for over double that. Mm. And I think Birmingham may be a bit disappointed, but it'll be interesting to see how they reinvest that money elsewhere, because I think they do need some more additions in the squad. But at the same time, are you going to find a player of Gray's quality and, you know, ability for a similar price? You're going to probably have to look towards the lower leagues
to get
someone for that price.
Guy Rout knows the lower leagues, and no doubt will find someone.
Mm,
just a quick final word on Gray. He started off as a winger. Does he now play more as a support striker? And if so, where does he fit into this Leicester side? Because under Ranieri, they've played primarily 4-4-2, haven't they? With Vardy playing up front with Mahrez just tucked in behind him. Where would Gray fit into that side?
I think with Leicester, they've obviously got... the wingers are very good. You know, Mahrez has been exceptional this season. Maybe he could slot into the other side. But at the same time, you've got to look at Leicester. Obviously, the talks about Jamie Vardy, he's broke that record this season. He's scoring goals all the time. Dropped off it in recent weeks, but then you look at the whole season, he's been great. Gray, I think, would sit, if you look at the rest of their strikers, got Ajoa, you know, scores occasionally. You got Kramaric is still there as well, but not really playing.
Yeah, I think he could get that on loan. He's not really.
Yeah, Okazaki as well. I think Gray may be a good supporting striker alongside Vardy, someone who could run off him, and, you know, you've really got that pace up front then that will cause problems for both centre-backs and full-backs. But he's good to have, much like El Mahabedi, when you've got a player who can play two positions, particularly like Gray, who's good centrally but can also play out wide. He's going to be quite a good asset for Leicester, especially at his age. You look towards the future, and if Leicester are looking to establish themselves as a regular top half Premier League team, you look a few years down the line, he could be a really big player for them.
Yeah, big loss of Birmingham. Perhaps not getting the money they'd want for him, but a player with a very, very bright future. Watch out for Demarai Gray. That's the end of part three. In part four, we'll have a look at League One and League Two.
We love the Football League. The 72 Podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome to part four of the 72 Podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire. Don't forget, you can send us your thoughts via at FBL72 on Twitter, or just visit the72.co.uk. I'm Billy Banks, with me the editor of the 72, that's Tom Carnduff, and joining us to talk a little bit of League One and League Two is Radio Yorkshire's Tom Feeney. Nice to have you on, Tom.
Hello, mate, how are we doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Let's start with Peterborough, dipping into the non-league market. They're going to offer a trial to Nuneaton pair, Aaron Williams and Zeus De La Paz. What a great name that is. Tom, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, I'm not surprised Aaron Williams is getting a trial. He's someone who spent a lot of time at Walsall in the youth level, joined Nuneaton at the start of this season and really hit the ground running immediately. I've watched him play a couple of times and I've been really impressed. I think he's one of them players you can tell he's just a step above the other players on the pitch. So I'm not surprised they're going in for him. Zeus De La Paz, he's, you know, someone who had quite a good pedigree, was at PSV Eindhoven in the youth system. And, you know, he's dropped down to non-league, joined England, gone to non-league. And really, he's someone who's working his way up. He's one of these goalkeepers, obviously very young as well. And obviously, when you're a goalkeeper, you know, you can be playing into your 40s. So he's got, to me, a good 15, 20 years left in him.
Non-league seems to be all the rage at the moment. Are either of these two the next Chris Smalling, the next Jamie Vardy, the next Charlie Austin?
I think Williams has the potential to do better than League One. I think he's he could be a championship player. I'm not saying he'll be the next Jamie Vardy, but I do think he's someone who, you know, you get him for a nominal fee, what, £30,000 maybe. He's one of them players in a couple of years' time. Wouldn't surprise me if he left for a couple of million pounds.
Very interesting. Let's have a look at Coventry. Adam Armstrong, been a prolific striker in League One on loan from Newcastle. His loan's ended, but Coventry, I imagine, desperately trying to get the rest of the season for him.
Yeah, he's come back for them now. He joined in time. Well, he played at Crewe at the weekend, scored a hat-trick. Before that, he'd already got 13 goals in 21 appearances, so add the hat-trick to that and he's laughing. And then at the same time, Newcastle United are struggling for goals, have loaned out Armstrong again to Coventry. I think they've got a recall clause in it this time. However, you look at that and you go, Coventry are very, very lucky to get him back. With that form, you think a championship club would come in asking about his availability, because a lot of championship clubs do need a striker. So Coventry should count themselves very lucky that they've got Adam Armstrong back. He's got it all, though. He's fantastic. I mean, from week one, really, where he's scoring the goals, then you could tell he was going to be a big player for them this season. I mean, a lot's been said about Coventry's use of that loan system, but they've used it, you know, to their strengths. They're laughing at the moment in League One, and they look to be on their way back up. Tony Mowbray's really got them playing well, and Adam Armstrong's a key part of that as well. So they'll be hoping that Newcastle don't end up recalling him and they can keep him to the end of the season.
Great signing for Coventry then. Let's have a look at some Yorkshire bits and bobs. Paul Digby could be joining Ipswich on loan from Barnsley. I remember when he burst onto the scene. I think he was a 17-year-old and looked like the next big thing. I've not heard his name since. Tom, what's happened in the meantime?
It's an interesting one because he's one of these players who could have been the next John Stones. You know, when you look at an obvious example, came through and made a lot of appearances for the youth side and then really hasn't been given a chance in the first team. I don't know whether it's a case they don't feel he's ready, but it's interesting Mick McCarthy signing him on loan. Basically, this is a chance for him to give him a trial, basically, for a couple of months. He believes he should be changing his position, though, and he feels that, you know,
Is he an attacking midfielder at the moment?
He's a central defensive midfielder,
right,
and he believes that Digby's a better centre-back.
Oh.
So he actually could fit into that John Stones mould of someone, you know, good with the ball, you know, not afraid to have the ball in, you know, his own penalty area and work his way from the back. So I think it's a good signing for Ipswich, and this is just yet again Mick McCarthy proving, you know, why he's such a good manager. Instead of making the risk, you know, maybe spending £500,000 on him, gets him out on loan for a couple of months, sees if he's any good, and if he is, he'll sign him, and if he isn't, no harm done, he goes back.
Yeah, well, we saw that he's got a great eye for a player from lower down the Football League pyramid. What was the left-back called he sold to Bournemouth?
It was Aaron Creswell. No, it was Tyrone Mings. And Aaron Creswell obviously went to West Ham as well, so he can do that.
Exactly, so it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. Let's have a look at York City, a wretched season for them. Showing signs of improvement, though, under Jackie McNamara at last. That link with Kenny McAvoy, is that the correct pronunciation of his name?
Sounds about right.
He's been released from Tottenham, so he's got a bit of Premier League pedigree. I know nothing about him. What can you tell me, lads?
Joined on a short-term loan deal in November to York. He's gone on to be quite a key part of that York City side. But yesterday, Spurs in decided that they'd release him, that he didn't have a future at Spurs. So York City are obviously the favourites and are very keen to sign him permanently. I think at his age, he'll be a very good signing for them to go down to League Two and get regular football and come back up the Football League system that way. I think one of the most remarkable things about him is he's the exact spit lookalike of Gareth Bale.
Really?
Yeah, he looks exactly like Gareth Bale.
Well, if he becomes anywhere near as good a player, then York won't be complaining.
Yeah.
Exactly. And finally, Oxford United's Kamar Roof attracting interest from Championship and Premier League clubs. What?
Well, he's someone who's impressed. You know, he's had a load of loan spells out. He was at West Brom initially, one of these situations where they couldn't fit him in the team, but they didn't want to get rid of him, so they sent him here, there and everywhere on loan. Goes to Oxford United, found a starting role, and I do think he's better than League Two. You know, he's someone who really adds a bit of flair, a bit of pace to the game, and maybe not Premier League yet. I don't think he's ready for that, but if you're a Championship side looking for a flair player, I think, you know, for the money that you'll be able to spend for him, he's not a bad option.
Well, there you go. That's what's happening in League One and Two regarding transfers. Coming up in Part 5, we'll be looking ahead to the FA Cup third round.
We love the Football League. The 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Time for Part 5 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire and the return of the FA Cup this weekend, the third round, of course. We've got some interesting games. We've got 5 all Premier League ties, so no need to talk about them. But some really intriguing ones to look at here, Tom. I suppose we could start with Exeter v Liverpool on Friday.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the FA Cup. I do enjoy it when it comes around, especially when it comes to the third round. You get the smaller teams, there's a few non-league teams in there, coming up against these bigger sides. I personally want to see my team get as far as they can. I'd love to go to Wembley to watch my side play at Wembley. But yeah, there's a good chance of maybe some cup upsets this weekend. Let's start with Exeter. Like I said, Exeter v Liverpool. Exeter not had the best of seasons, currently sat in 16th in League Two, but got that home tie against Liverpool, who've dropped off the pace a bit in recent weeks. They've not been... You know, even under Klopp, there's been a lot said, but they've struggled in recent weeks. And especially at home, Exeter might look at this and go, you know what, we fancy this. Fancy our chances here. Would they win? Obviously, it's hard to tell. You know, that's the thing with cup upsets. But I think they'll give it definitely a good go. Put the strongest team they can out there. They might exploit Liverpool in terms of their, if Liverpool drop players, bring in some reserves that might not do a job for them. I think that's where Exeter could possibly cause a cup upset here.
Yeah, it could be one of the cards. A long trip, of course, as well for Liverpool. A really intriguing one for me, the early kickoff on Saturday, 12:45, Wickham v Aston Villa. Now, Villa have been absolutely wretched in the Premier League. They've really struggled. I think it's the second lowest points total at the midway point of a season. They look like they're heading for relegation. Going up away at Wickham, I suppose this is a big test for Villa to see how much they've fallen over the last few years.
Yeah, Villa will want to obviously look at the cup. They'll want to repeat as close to last year as they can in terms of the cup. They'll want that Wembley trip, just, you know, give them some bit of success, because they look like they'll be joining us in the Football League next season. But for Wickham, you look at this game and go, they really are struggling. Everything's going against them. They're not even in double points yet. And you've got to look at that and say, you know what, especially similar to Exeter, we're at home here. They're not going to come in, you know, the best of form or the best of attitudes, really. It's not going well for them. Wickham can look at this as a game they could realistically win, because Wickham aren't doing too bad themselves. So if they could, it would be interesting to see as well what side Villa play, because they'll want Premier League survival, but at the same time they'll want to look at this as a way of getting some momentum, getting obviously something for the fans to cheer about, finally a win no matter who it's against. If they do play that weaker squad, you look at the first team really aren't performing at all. I can't imagine the reserves are going to be much better. So it is a golden chance, really, for Wickham to get through to the fourth round, and probably the best Premier League opposition they could have, well, been drawn against.
Opportunity for a giant killing there, then. And what about this? Eastleigh, the lowest-ranked side left in the tournament, against Bolton Wanderers, who, again, bottom of their league, really struggle, financial problems, a bit of speculation about the manager in recent weeks as well. Eastleigh would be well up for this, and Bolton, well, they're a beleaguered animal.
Yeah, Bolton, much like Aston Villa, they're... struggling really, but there's so much of the off-the-field problems with all the debt, the transfer embargo. There's a potential takeover. No one really knows what's going on with that. Eastleigh will be looking at this game thinking, oh, great, this is probably one of the best Football League teams we could have got to play, really, at the current situation. But Bolton, again, similar to Villa, may look at the Cup as a welcome distraction. They look like they're down in the Championship. They'll want to look at this as a way to get, well, to get, you know, obviously the prize money, but at the same time, give the fans something to cheer about, try and get as far along the line as they can. There's always a surprise package or a couple of surprise packages from the Football League every season, the FA Cup. So Bolton could well be that this season, and they'll definitely want to avoid any slip-ups against, you know, Eastleigh, a team that they really should be beating on paper.
They definitely should be. All eyes will be on the Neil Redfern derby at Elland Road at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Leeds v Rotherham. This ended 1-0 to Rotherham in the Championship fixture a few weeks ago, and it's another intriguing battle.
Yeah, on paper it doesn't look like much, but there's a bit more to it with recent weeks and the events that's going on. Obviously, the Leeds-Rotherham game had the whole parking space affair and all the off-the-field talk like that. But then in recent weeks, there's been a lot of comments said between Neil Redfern towards Steve Evans and vice versa. Neil Redfern criticising the summer signings. Squad left him at Rotherham, wasn't trained correctly, etc. in the summer. So I think there's that bit of added edge to it, which will make probably both managers want their side to win to get another one over. I'm sure Steve Evans will be annoyed to lose, particularly at home to his former side and a struggling side in Rotherham. So I think Leeds will want to, not necessarily for it being the Cup, just want a way of getting back at Rotherham for what was really a surprise result, especially at home, not to score and to lose.
Leeds haven't had a good cup run for a while, in my memory. And Steve Evans has had some great cup runs as a manager, so I'm sure they'll be looking to go far in the competition. Saturday evening, Manchester United versus Sheffield United. Two big clubs, it's got to be said. It's at Old Trafford. United have had a couple of high-profile dumpings out of cup competitions under Louis van Gaal. We all know about the 4-0 against the MK Dons and also losing to Borough in the Capital One Cup this season. Sheffield United, they'll be well up for this, and absolutely nothing to lose.
I think this is the best chance of a cup upset we're going to get this weekend. Sheffield United, they've been there, done that. You look at the other season in the FA Cup under Clough, they got to the semi-finals. The same in the League Cup, they got to the semi-finals there, fell short both to Premier League opposition. Sheffield United will certainly fancy their chances. Man United not in the best of form at the moment. They're struggling. There's a lot of, you know, the fan base want Van Gaal gone. They want a change in management. Especially, it's a kind of, well, what's been labelled as a boring style of football, whereas Sheffield United will be looking to attack. You know, they're much better going forward than they are defending, especially against Premier League team. And if Man United do put a full-strength side out, they're really going to be in for a busy afternoon. So I think they'll fancy their chances here. I think they really will. I think it is our best chance of seeing a cup upset. And I think if it goes their way, and Man United have been playing as they have in recent weeks, even with Sheffield United being out of form, even at Old Trafford, I think they could probably nick a goal here and win it.
Should be exciting. That's the Saturday evening kick-off. And then on Sunday, we've got some other intriguing ones. Oxford host Swansea and Chelsea at home to Scunthorpe. So, you know, there a couple of other giant killings could be on the cards there, maybe.
Yeah, particularly Oxford. They've had a very good season. Got good key players. We've spoke about Kemar Roof before. Very good player. They'll well, hopefully he'll be there by the time the weekend comes, which I imagine he will be. They'll be looking at that. They're in good form. They'll be looking towards a team who have really kind of struggled in the Premier League this season, that they could go and win that one. There could be a few cup upsets this weekend, I'm thinking.
Yeah, should be exciting. So there you go, the third round of the FA Cup. Games on Friday, Saturday and Sunday this weekend. Coming up, we'll have our predictions.
All About the Game, the 72 podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Well, here we go. We've made it to part six, the final part of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. And it's time for our predictions. What happened last week, Tom?
Last week, you did very well.
Did I?
Last week. She got on last week.
Oh, did I?
Well, we say last week, last episode, because it's been a few weeks. Obviously, Christmas got in the way. Start off with Middlesbrough-Burnley. That finished 1-0. I went for a 2-1 Middlesbrough win. Radio Yorkshire, represented by Tom Feeney, went for a 2-1 Burnley win. And Billy, you went 1-0 Borough. So that's 3 points to you.
Watertight Ipswich, defence at Borough.
Ipswich derby. I went 1-1. Radio Yorkshire, represented by Tom Feeney, went wrong again with 1-0 Ipswich. And Billy, you went 3-1 derby. So you got correct result there. And in the final one, Northampton-Portsmouth finished 2-1 to Portsmouth. I went 2-0, Radio Yorkshire went 2-2, and Billy, you went 2-1, so no points there.
So I was the winner then last time out.
Yeah, that week you've done very well. That's very well, and as a result, the table now, me and Sam, although you've been stepping in for him last week and this week.
Presenter.
Me and presenter are on 10 each, and Radio Yorkshire, represented by Tom Feeney pretty much every week, are still on 2.
Not doing too bad. Not putting some of the board.
Not going well.
At least you bring great analysis, Tom. That's all we can say. Let's have a look at this week's games then. We've got Middlesbrough Burnley again because it's the FA Cup. Also Hull City v Brighton and Peterborough v Preston. So let's start with Borough Burnley. Tom Carnduff, what are you going for?
Yeah, it should be a very interesting game, this one. Borough obviously top of the league with that big win against Derby last weekend. Burnley have maybe stepped off the gas a bit in recent weeks. Borough at home, though, I imagine even though they're doing well in the league, they'll still want a good cup run to go alongside it to get as much success this season as possible. I think it's going to be a tough one for Burnley on the road, even with Andre Gray up front for them. I'm going to go for, I reckon that it'll be another home win, much like we saw the other week, and I'm going to say 2-1 to Middlesbrough.
2-1 to Middlesbrough. Feeney?
I'm going to agree. I think Middlesbrough will win this. The interesting thing with the FA Cup, obviously, is whether a manager makes a couple of changes, because you could argue Middlesbrough and Burnley's priority is to gain promotion and not to have a cup run, but I think Middlesbrough will go as strong as possible just to keep the momentum going. So I'm going to say Middlesbrough 1, Burnley 0.
OK, and I've gone for the same, Middlesbrough 1, Burnley 0. There's two ways of looking at it. Will Borough want to keep up their momentum by winning in the Cup, or will they rest a few players and be concentrating solely on the Premier League? I think they will rest a few players, but they've got such a solid defensive unit at the moment, I can see it being 1-0. Let's move on to Hull City v Brighton then. Another intriguing encounter involving two sides right at the top of the Championship.
Yeah, the FA Cup's been a bit weird this season, especially in the third round. A lot of teams have been drawn against the same team or teams in the same division. Yeah. So we've got two top of the Championship table clashes now in Hull City, Brighton, as well as Borough, Burnley. Hull, obviously, they're doing very well. Brighton have slipped off a bit in recent weeks. And I think, like we said before, Brighton have got to kind of look at their position in the table, whether they'll see the Cup as a distraction, because they'll want to get their season back on track and push towards promotion, making sure they do get that playoff place at least in the end. I think they're going to rest a few players, Brian. Hull may rest one or two, but I think, much like Borough, I think they'll want to try and win as much as they can. So I'm going to go for 2-0 Hull.
2-0 Hull. Tom Feeney, what's your prediction?
See, I don't agree with that. I think Brighton will pick the strongest side possible because they've lost a bit of momentum. They've lost a few games in a row. But I still think Hull will win this one. I'm going to say 3-2 Hull.
3-2 Hull. I've gone quite similar to Feeney again, actually. 3-1 Hull is my prediction. Hull, we know under Steve Bruce, a strong FA Cup side. Got to the final only a couple of years ago, of course. So I think that a 3-1 comfortable win. I think Brighton's miserable run of form will continue. And finally, Peterborough v Preston. An intriguing one because Peterborough have been decent under the new boss in League One. And Preston have made a good fist of trying to stay up in the Championship as well. So Tom Carnduff, will start with you.
Yeah, Preston improved in recent weeks, like I said, Peterborough, since the managerial change. It's really, really going well for them. They've broke into the top six in League One, scoring lots of goals as well. Connor Washington's been fantastic for Peterborough in recent weeks. He's obviously attracting quite a lot of interest going into the transfer window. Peterborough love to score goals, but at the same time, I think Preston have started to hit the net a bit more. At the start of the season, strikers couldn't score at all, but now they've kind of settled into it. I'm going to say, I think this one will go to a replay, you know, but I reckon it's going to be high scoring. I'm going to say 2-2.
2-2 for Tom Carnduff. Tom Feeney?
Well, the thing that I look at when I look at Preston is how good their defence is, the amount of clean sheets they've kept, and I think they'll keep another one in this. I'm going to say 0-0. I think Preston will be happy to take that back as a replay, and I think they'll then win the game at Deepdale.
0-0 for Tom Feeney. I've gone for 0-1. I think Preston's defence has been very impressive. I think they'll keep out Peterborough, and I think they'll nick a goal in the second half as well and win 1-0. Well, there you go. There's our predictions for this week. Please, please don't base your accumulators on anything you've just heard in part six. The 72 podcast will be back next week. Until then, enjoy the football over the weekend and make sure you visit the 72.co.uk.
You're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.